if you've got a neighbor or a good friend, they come to you and they say, "Look, I've started reading my Bible, but I get stuck in the Old Testament. I have no idea how to figure that part of the Bible out. What is it about? What's the Old Testament teaching? What's the basic storyline of the Old Testament? Can you tell me that? Could you tell them that? And could you do it in about 30 minutes? Cover every single book of the Old Testament and tell them the basic chronological flow of the Old Testament." Getting closer to home, if you had a grandchild come to you and ask you that question, or a child, "Mom, Dad, Grandma, Grandpa, what is the Old Testament about?" Would you have to pass them off to somebody else and let them explain it? And be very honest with you, if you can't do that, if you've been a Christian very long and you can't tell somebody what the Old Testament is about, that's not good. You ought to be able to do it. I understand that a study of the Old Testament can be overwhelming. It can be rather daunting because the size of it has 39 books that comprise the Old Testament. And some of those books cover some very complex. You get into Ezekiel and things, parts of Daniel, and it can be somewhat confusing. But here's what you're looking at. These are the 39 Old Testament books. Those first five books, the Pentateuch, the Law, and then the 12 books of history. And you've got five books of poetry, and then you've got 17 books of prophecy. And you look at that and you think, wow, where do you start? And what books contain the story flow, the flow of the story of the Old Testament? If we can simplify the answer to that question, if this morning I can simplify that for you, so that this afternoon, if you had that hypothetical request from a neighbor, a friend, a relative, or a grandchild or a child, if we can simplify that so that you can say, "Oh, I'm glad you asked. Do you have 30 minutes?" "Yeah." Then let me explain to you what the Old Testament is all about. What I've tried to do, since I have a rather simple mind, if I can simplify something without oversimplification, and we need to be careful not to oversimplify, but we need also to be careful to make things as simple as we possibly can. So if we can simplify an approach to this, so that if somebody comes to you and asks you what the Old Testament is about, you can say, "Glad you asked me that question, because I can give you that information. I can tell you what the Old Testament is about if you can give me about 30 minutes. And so, what we're going to do is, I'm going to suggest my approach to this. Something that I call the Old Testament by the numbers. I've selected arbitrarily, you may disagree with me, and that's, as I said, that's your right to be wrong. But I have just arbitrarily selected numbers that represent significant events, significant people, significant episodes. And if we can remember these numbers, then we ought to be able to explain the storyline of the Old Testament. Out of all 39 books of the Old Testament, Here's the first number you need to remember. You only need to be acquainted with 12 of those. That's it. You just need to be acquainted with 12 of those books in order to get the basic chronological flow and storyline of the Old Testament. Now, I am not saying ignore the other 27. That's not the point. But if you're just interested in getting the chronological story of the Old Testament, if that's what you're wanting to do for somebody, then you just need to know 12 books. That's it. The other 27 are valuable because they contain a massive amount of information that's valuable. But in order to get the basic storyline, you just need to know 12 books. Now, which 12 books do we select as being the real core books of the Old Testament? Out of that 39, what do? That's it right there, in my opinion. Those are the 12 books. If you know those 12 books, if you know what basically is contained in those 12 books, you've got it. You can tell people what the Old Testament is about, the chronological story, with just those 12 books. And so, what we're going to do this morning, and don't get too shook up, we will get out of here at a reasonable time. We're going to go through the entire Old Testament this morning. All 39 books. And we'll try to get through in about 30 minutes from right now. Okay? As we take a look at significant numbers that correspond to significant books, periods of time, people, and events. And let me just begin with the book of Genesis and the number 3. The number 3 is the key number, whenever you consider the book of Genesis. First of all, because of the 3 main characters, and that's saying a lot, I know, because there are a ton of characters in the book of Genesis that are important. But these 3 men are the major characters of the Old Testament. These are the men that Stephen referred to in Acts 7 as the patriarchs. These were the heads of families. And the reason these 3 men are important and are the main characters of the book of Genesis is because of 3 promises. There were 3 promises, first given to Abraham and then repeated to Isaac and Jacob. And these 3 promises are the basis of what not only the Old Testament is about, but what the New Testament is about, especially the 3rd promise. Let's briefly take a look at these 3 promises. The first promise that God made to Abraham was, He talked about the land which I will show you. God promised to Abraham a lot of land. This was the land of Canaan, the land of Palestine today. That promise was fulfilled in the book of Joshua in those passages. We don't have to wait to some future event. Those promises concerning the land have been fulfilled. The second promise, I will make you a great nation. A lot of land, but you're going to become a great nation. Your descendants will become a great nation. When you get to the book of Exodus, chapter 1 and verse 7, that promise was fulfilled. So by the time you get to the end of Genesis and the very beginning of Exodus, 2/3 of the promises that God made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob have been fulfilled. That leaves the 3rd promise, and I think unarguably the most important promise. In you, that is in your descendants, in you all the families of the earth will be blessed. This was fulfilled, according to Paul in Galatians 3, in those verses, in Jesus Christ. He was the seed. He was the offspring. that would bring spiritual blessings to everybody on earth. You see now why I selected the number 3 as the key number for the book of Genesis. 3 major characters, 3 promises, especially the 3rd, was very significant. By the end of the book of Genesis, you have the descendants of Abraham in the land of Egypt. About 70 some odd went down there. And that brings us to the book of Exodus. The key number for the book of Exodus is 215. We'll get to that in just a moment. When you begin the book of Exodus, the people that have gone down into Egypt to escape the famine that was in the land of Canaan, 70 some odd went down there, and now you have a mighty nation living in the land of Goshen. Several million people. Over the period of time, God's promise of a mighty nation had been fulfilled. Pharaoh sees the growth of that nation in the land of Goshen, and he's scared that they'll rise up in rebellion and overcome them. And so he enslaves them for 215 years. I'm not going to get off on this now. If you want to talk about this later, we can. But we normally assign 400 as the number of years that the people were in bondage, but I don't believe that's correct. 215 from a textual standpoint, I think is the correct number. We can discuss that at some other time. But if you'll remember 215 in the book of Exodus, that's the number of years that the people were in bondage. God raised up Moses as the deliverer of the people. And after their 215 years of captivity in the land of Egypt, Moses came and took them out of Egyptian bondage. And they were headed toward Canaan. They were headed toward the promised land. They already had the great nation promise fulfilled. Now they're looking for the land promise. And Moses says, okay, let's go. And so they leave Egypt. And they come to Mount Sinai. And they spend a year at Mount Sinai, where the Ten Commandments are given to the Jews and the tabernacle is built. And they leave Mount Sinai after a year, and they're headed toward that land, that promised land. They get to a place called Kadesh Barnea, and they lose their faith in God. They say, we can't go in and conquer the land. It's just, people are too big, they're just too much, we can't do it. And we come to the book of Numbers, remember the number 40. Because that's the number of years that the Jews had to wander aimlessly in the desert because of their unbelief. At the end of that 40 years, and even Moses fell prey to a moment of unbelief, and he was punished by not being able to take the people into Canaan. This brings us now to the book of Deuteronomy. The book of Deuteronomy, remember the number 120. Because in the book of Deuteronomy, you have Moses' death. Moses was 120 years old at the time of his death. The book of Deuteronomy simply contains Moses retelling or re-giving the old law to the people before his death. And at the end of the book of Deuteronomy, Moses dies. 120 years, a good man, died full of faith. He's being punished because of a mistake that he had made some time before, but still, a godly man. And very few men like him in the Old Testament. And Moses dies. And at the death of Moses, a man by the name of Joshua, the man that Moses had depended upon as his second in charge, I guess you would call him, for the last 40 years. Joshua takes his place. And it's Joshua that takes the people across the Jordan River and into the land of Canaan. And remember the number 7 whenever you come to the book of Joshua, because it took about 7 years for the people to conquer the land. Now, the book of Joshua covers a longer time period than that. But as far as conquering the land and getting the land that God promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, it took about 7 years. And if you'll remember the number seven, whenever you see Joshua, then you'll understand why that number is significant. Joshua died. And when Joshua dies, there is not a single leader as they had had with Moses and as they had had with Joshua. What happened after Joshua died was that the people became unfaithful to God. They would go after the idols that were in the land. And when they did that, God would punish them by allowing other nations to come in and oppress them. The people would be penitent. They would ask God to deliver them from their oppressors. And God raised up, over a period of 300 years, God raised up 14 judges, a total of 14 different judges over 300 years. These judges would help deliver the people from their oppressors. And that's what the book of Judges, through the first 8 chapters of 1 Samuel, is all about. And the numbers 14 and 300 are important there for those reasons. Samuel was the last judge that the people had. Toward the end of Samuel's life, the people became dissatisfied with the judges that God had been giving the people. They wanted a king. They had to be just like all the nations around them. And so they went to Samuel and they said, "Give us a king." And that was not Samuel's idea that they have a king. He thought it was a bad idea. God didn't like it either. But God says, if they want a king, then I'll give them kings. From 1 Samuel 8 through 1 Kings chapter 11, remember the number 120. Saul first, David second, Solomon third. 40, 40, 40. During the reigns of Saul, David, and Solomon, the kingdom was united under those three men. And so for 120 years, they got what they wanted. They got their king and enjoyed for about 120 years peace and unity as a nation. Solomon dies. And when Solomon died, the kingdom divided. Rehoboam, his son, used some very, very, very poor judgment when his dad died. And the people came to him and said, "You know, make the yoke, make the burden that your dad put upon us, make it lighter." He said, he listened to the young people, his peers, and said, I'm not going to lighten it. I'll just make it even harder." And the kingdom divided. Rehoboam became king of the southern section, Judah. Jeroboam became the king of the northern section, Israel. For 200 years, Israel existed as the northern kingdom in this divided kingdom set up. They had a succession of kings. Every single one of them was evil. Absolutely every one of them. From 921 till 721, Israel existed as a kingdom. But their idolatry got to where God could not tolerate it any longer. And He sent the Assyrians. And the Assyrians took them captive. And they never came back from that captivity. That left Judah as the only nation in the land. They existed for another 135 years. This is 1 Kings 12 through 2 Kings chapter 16 and verse 20. The kings of Judah were some good, some evil. Some good, some evil. But the evil ones won out. And the evil kings eventually did to the kingdom of Judah what the evil kings did to the kingdom of Israel. Led them off into idolatry. And God punished the kingdom of Judah with 70 years of captivity because of their sins. Now God had made a promise to Abraham, remember, in Genesis chapter 12, that you're going to have a descendant that's going to bless all the nations. And so that descendant was to come through the tribe of Judah. That promise had to be kept. And so they came back from captivity, as opposed to the Israelites that did not come back from captivity. After 70 years of captivity, 2 Kings chapters 23 through 25, remember the number 3. Three groups of Israelites were taken into Babylonian captivity. And then after 70 years, remember the books of Ezra and Nehemiah, because they contain, again, the significant number 3. Just as 3 groups had gone into captivity in stages, 3 groups came in stages back to the land and returned from captivity. That's the Old Testament by numbers. That's the storyline of what the Old Testament is all about. That's it. It didn't take me 30 minutes. And it shouldn't take you that long. Somebody said, well, what about the other? You say we're going to cover every Old Testament book? That's right. That's right. So what about the remaining 27 books? How do they fit in? You want to be able to explain this also. You don't want to leave the impression that the other 27 are not important. You want to be able to plug them in and say, okay, here's where they come in. All right, let's take a look at that. The book of Leviticus, which we skipped, is simply the details of the law that was given on Mount Sinai. Very meticulous details about so many, many things. Good to know information, but not need to know information. The book of Ruth, a beautiful story that should not be ignored, but it doesn't need to be studied in order to get the storyline of the Old Testament. The book of Ruth, the events that took place in the book of Ruth, took place during the period of the judges. And the book of Esther is a book that events occurred during that second return from captivity. Remember, there were 3 groups that returned. It was during the period of that second group that returned from captivity that the book of Esther takes place. First and Second Chronicles. Again, it doesn't, it's not a dead parallel to First and Second Kings. First and Second Chronicles contain genealogies, and it focuses attention really upon the tribe of Judah. It talks about Saul, David, Solomon, the division of the kingdom, and it talks about the attempts at restoring Judah. And that's what First and Second Chronicles is about. Again, nice to know information, but not need to know information. Then you have the books of poetry. Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon, written by David and Solomon. And then the book of Job. We don't know who the author was of Job, and we don't know the date and the period in which Job wrote. A great, great book to study from the standpoint of human suffering and so forth. But again, it doesn't have to go into the storyline segment of the Old Testament. And then you have the 5 major and 12 minor prophets. Major because they wrote longer books. Minor because they wrote shorter books. These men wrote and spoke during the period of the divided kingdom, the captivity, and the period of the return from Babylonian captivity. And so, whenever you are asked by someone, tell me the storyline of the Old Testament, I hope that we've given you adequate information this morning that has simplified without oversimplifying, that would allow you to sit down with whoever asks you and say, here is what the Old Testament is all about.